The Dead Pair Podcast is brought to you by the Elite Experience, Elite Shotguns, and is fueled by Fiocchi.
Paul?
Welcome to the Dead Pair Podcast, coming in hot with everything you want to hear about sporting clays.
Guy Fieri.
How are you, gentlemen? Thanks for having me.
Anthony Matarese Jr., how you doing tonight?
I'm doing pretty well.
Welcome back, David Radulovich.
That's a net positive.
Brad Kidd.
Corey Cruz. Thank you for joining us this evening.
Now I feel awkward.
With your hosts, Jason Rambo.
One more Red Bull for you.
And Sean Alley.
Woo, yeah!
Christmas.
Let's do it.
Often imitated but never duplicated. It's the Dead Pair Podcast.
The Dead Pair.
And now, it's showtime.
Welcome back, everybody. What's up, Mr. Large and in charge?
Jason, doing well. How about yourself, buddy?
Oh, I'm doing just finer than frog hair.
Finer than frog
hair. Finer than frog hair. Yeah, it keeps getting hot down here, dude. I don't know. It must be global warming or something. I don't know. So.
Well, we had nice weather last week, and then it's all the way back to wintertime again this week. So, yeah. You know how March in Ohio is. It's not the easiest thing to deal with.
It's like a roller coaster looking at the temperature gauge.
But, you know, the good news is better weather's on the way, and hopefully we'll get out and be able to start shooting a little bit more regularly. But
yeah. I'll be.
What else is going on?
I'll be back up there soon enough. I still got a house up there and lots of stuff to do. So I'll be seeing you soon. You'll get to Sean Alley. You'll get to spend time with your favorite podcast partner again. So
you better believe it.
Hey, speaking of which, saw you shot a tournament up at Hillendale.
Yep.
Looked like those were some pretty challenging targets.
Yeah, they were. I mean, I shot pretty well. I dropped a couple I shouldn't have, but man, I tell you what, I think I ended up with like a 91 or 92, and then, Joe Charnigo shot like a 99, dude. I mean, just completely lights out on that. So
yeah, what's that trap guy doing over here, huh?
Hey, he can still shoot with the best of them. I don't care what anybody says about him. He can knock them down.
Hey, speaking of tournaments, we've got some new tournaments that were released this week, and they're up on Score Chaser. Sean Alley, you ready to do a tourney talk?
I'm ready, buddy.
It's Tourney Talk.
Tourney.
Brought to you by Score Chaser.
All right, the Texas State Super Sporting at Brownwood Claybird Club, August 1st through 4th. That is up and ready to go. Also, the Caribbean Classic at Vero Beach, February 3rd through the 10th, and that's next year for 2025. Also, the Blackjack Open at Blackjack Sporting Clays is next year, January 24th through the 26th. You guys, hurry up, get signed up for those. You know how bad it is when you're getting into these big shoots. You need to sign up early and get all your stuff picked out, the time slots you want, so on and so forth. So get after it.
So, Sean, tonight we're talking traveling with your firearm. Now, way back, I mean, if you get in a way back wagon, I believe it was like episode 2. We did... on traveling with your shotgun. Now, things have changed since then. That's been 4 years ago.
Yep.
A lot has changed. And speaking of what has changed, we're going to have Mr. John Comerford, Chief of Operations for the NRA, coming on. He recently had a meeting with the TSA, so hopefully he can shed a little light on that. Of course, we're also going to have Frank Bruno from the NYPD shotgun team, former... New York Police Department officer, now retired and enjoying the shooting life. But
yes,
these are
is.
Two people that know a lot about traveling with your shotgun, your firearm, and they both compete, you know, so they can level with us actually going through all of it. You know, it's funny because you think Florida is a red state, right? I mean, they're all about your firearms and Second Amendment.
Right.
And you think California, now I know they do a lot of shooting in California, but it's primarily a blue state. The worst airport I've had to go through yet with my shotgun, Sean, has been Tampa. And the best airport I've had to go through is John Wayne over in California. You know, you walk up to the counter at John Wayne, and it's like, oh, you know, I like to clear a firearm. And they're like, yeah, so what? Throw it on the cart. I don't care. You know?
Yeah.
You walk up in Tampa, and it's like there's alarms go off and whistles and buzzers and escorts that come over, and holy cow.
Well, and I've had a mixed bag, too. I mean, it just depends on, like you said, where you go, what airline you're flying. I mean, it's crazy, man. I've seen all kinds of stuff, and I really wish they would standardize this procedure more and just basically make it the same for all airports, all airlines, and, you know, across the country. But that's why we're getting these guys on. We're going to talk about that and hopefully clarify some of these issues.
Yeah, and another thing, too, you know, since episode two, Sean, you and I have done a lot of competing since then. We've done a lot of traveling since then, especially me.
Yes, we have.
I've bounced all over this countryside and flown into a lot of different airports and seen a lot of what can and can't happen.
Yep.
And then we've had a lot of requests for this episode, a lot of them. Even though people have listened to that, you know, episode two, there's, like I said, things have changed. So, and these two guests that we're going to have on are experts in this field and traveling with shotguns. So, lots of questions for them. Sean, I know you got your notes handy and I got mine handy. So, yep. What do you say we get Mr. Comerford and Mr. Bruno on?
Sounds great, buddy. Let's make it happen. The Dead Pair.
All right, very honored and very privileged to have Mr. John Comerford from the NRA. What's up, John?
Hey, guys. How are you?
And joining us also, Mr. Frank Bruno, formerly of the NYPD. What's up, Frank?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. How are you doing today?
Good, Frankie. How you doing, buddy?
Great, Sean.
Well, hey, listen, I'm going to jump right in because I called you guys and you're spewing all this good information. It's like, wait, let me hit record first. So, John, let's start with you. I know that you guys had a recent meeting with TSA, and I say you guys meaning the NRA. What's going on with TSA? Is there some kind of new rules, regulations, anything we need to be aware of?
It's not a new rule per se, but myself and some of our other senior staff here at the NRA met with the TSA administrator, who was a Trump appointee, actually, and their senior staff. And we're going to work together on a program to help educate gun owners to try to slow down the rates of firearms showing up at TSA checkpoints. So we met with them yesterday. And just to let you know, in that one day, 40 firearms were recovered at TSA checkpoints. So, and we're talking folks who forget their concealed carry firearm, right? Not just parts, actual handguns. And the issue we see there is you potentially subject yourself to up to a $15,000 civil penalty. You lose your TSA pre-check for 5 years. And then you potentially face criminal penalties from local jurisdictions. TSA doesn't have criminal penalties and they don't seize your firearm, but the local jurisdiction may seize your firearm. So we're trying to work together on that. And then for a lot of the folks that listen, who travel to different shoots, you know, the process to declare a firearm when you travel is different at every airport. I made it very clear to TSA that in my personal experience, which is extensive, I've never been to one airport that's the same as the other on the firearm check process with TSA. So we work to identify some glaring issues in their own terminology, like, for instance, mentioning TSA locks on gun cases. You should never use a TSA lock on your gun case, and things like that. So it's a good partnership, and I think it benefits gun owners in the country.
You know what, John, you just touched on something there. Sean and I were talking before we got you guys on the phone, and it's funny because I mentioned that, you know, Florida is a very red state, and California traditionally is a blue state, right? The worst airport, the hardest airport I've ever had to get through with my firearm was in Tampa. And the easiest one was John Wayne, out in California. So it's back to what you said, the process for declaring a firearm and checking in a firearm seems to be different from airport to airport. But what you're saying is you guys are trying to standardize that with the TSA.
Yes. So when you first get to the airport, and it might be a good time to go over this. If somebody's listening, I always see posts on the Facebook groups and things. Folks get nervous about traveling with a firearm for the first time, and they shouldn't. It's a straightforward process. You need a hard-sided container for your firearm. It needs to have a lock. It should not have a TSA lock. It can be a combo lock. It can be a regular lock and key. Every hole on the hard-sided case needs to have a lock. So if there's one hole, it's one lock. If it's a Pelican with four holes, four locks. And when you show up to the airport, you don't use the self-service check-in. You go straight to the ticketing agent, and you just say, when you check in, I'd like to declare a firearm. They'll give you a little piece of paper. Sometimes they're white, sometimes they're orange. You'll declare that your firearm's unloaded. I think one thing we pointed out to TSA and airlines set their own policies, but you may incur go up to a ticketing agent and they say, you know, show me that your firearm's unloaded. You know, under no circumstance should you ever take your firearm out in the terminal of the airport. If they don't back off of that, you simply ask for a supervisor. Once you move on from that, they may bring a TSA agent to you to escort you to the place to have your firearm checked. They may take it in the back like regular luggage and tell you to wait for 10 minutes. If you don't hear anything, you can get on the plane. Sometimes there may be other processes. So what we tried to explain to TSA is, for instance, at Washington Reagan, which is the airport I use, I consider that the gold standard for traveling with a firearm. It is the most straightforward process. You show up, they take you to the TSA. It's right in front of you. You watch them scan your bag, you go to your plane. If anyone here has been to the Nationals, you know it's a horrible process in San Antonio. There's the room of doom, as I call it, right? When you fly, you fly American, you go to the room of doom. You wait in a line, and they take you in a room. They inspect every bag. If you fly United, you check in 20 yards to the left from American, and your gun goes into the back like any other airport. You wait 10 minutes, and you get on your plane. So we try to enlighten them on what it's like to be a gun owner and travel with a firearm. And they're absolutely willing to look at educating their employees to try to standardize that as much as possible.
Well, to give a quick story of what I mean by the easiest and the hardest. So John Wayne, it was like, you know, I walked up to the Southwest counter like I always do and like declare a firearm. And they looked at me like, who cares? You know, fill out this card. They didn't want to see the gun. You know, I have a soft case that goes over top of my hard case. You know, it's like a protective deal. They didn't even want me to open the hard case. They just threw the little tag in with the soft case and off on the conveyor it went. No big deal. Go get on your plane. Tampa, I walk up, need to declare a firearm, open it up, fill out this card, put it in there. Okay, now you got to wait for an escort. An escort for what? They need to take you back to TSA. I'm like, I just walked right past TSA. Come to find out, they feel that once you've checked it in, it's no longer in your possession, it's in their possession. So they bring an escort up that grabs the firearm, which is nothing more than somebody that works for Southwest, walks it back over there to TSA. They used to open the case, but now they're scanning it with an X-ray machine. And the guy sees the choke tubes in there and he goes, "What's that?" I said, "Well, let me explain to the guy examining firearms what a part of the firearm is. Don't do that. Don't, please don't do that."
Did that not go well?
You know, an anal scan's not too bad if you just hold still. No, anyway.
Okay. Did they use lube?
It's like, okay, it's a constriction for blah, blah, blah. Whatever. They understood. They send it on back through the conveyor and said, okay, you're good to go. And then I had to turn around and walk 20 yards back and get back in line. It's different everywhere you go, like what John
said. Yes, it is.
So I would hope that they can somehow standardize that in some way, shape, or form.
Yeah, and some of it's technology related. I actually learned just from our meeting that at Reagan Airport is handled totally different than anywhere else, which is evident by how smooth it works. But it's not an automated system, it's a manual system. And as they're expanding, you'll probably see in TSA checkpoints, they're having new scanning technology and things. And look, in the end, their job's to keep us safe. And they're looking for explosives. That's the biggest thing they're looking for is to make sure no explosives get on a plane. And it's definitely not an easy job they have. I try to be patient. I travel a lot, so I've had a lot of good and bad on those experiences. But you know, for anyone listening who does have a handgun and they choose to carry a handgun in their personal life, you know, just make sure you have a routine when you go to the airport. Double check your bags. Make sure you don't have any parts or that firearm with you, because it is a rough find and it holds everything up.
Gotcha. Well, hey, let me bounce over to Frank real quick. Frank, you know, not only were you a former NYPD officer, but like John, Jason, and I, you travel a lot and compete with guns. You know, what's some of the experiences that you've had at different airports? Anything good, bad, ugly, and different?
You know, it's funny how you say that. It's John, the value in your conversation is TSA is separate from local law enforcement. So I travel, I bring my firearm. Being a retired detective, I have, you know, reciprocity in all 48 states. Not a problem for me to carry, but it is a problem for TSA when you get there and I'm checking my firearms and I put my handgun, I take it apart. If I carry my Glock, I break it down into pieces and put it in with my shotgun. The problem I run into is people don't understand that you have to bring ammo with a firearm for it to work. So me being law enforcement, you have to have the original box for that ammo to go inside for you to travel with it. It cannot be in a bag. It can't be separate. It's literally got to be in a box from the original manufacturer of that ammo with all of its designation on it for you to actually bring it and carry it onto the plane in a separate container. It can't go in with the firearm. It has to go in a separate box.
And Frank, just to be clear for everyone listening, that's an airline regulation, and it can depend on the airline, not a TSA regulation, which I actually just learned this week that I was
really
wondering why it was different.
It's different everywhere I go.
Yeah, TSA allows you to have it actually in your magazine. They consider that a container. In reality, they just want it not to be able to fly around in your case. So a box, a container, a little tackle box. But many airlines, and we recommend just keeping your original container because it does make things easier.
Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, getting checked in, getting my bags, putting my firearm and my other luggage on the plane, not a problem, goes through X-ray. I've had all kinds of great experiences at airports. LAX, which I thought was going to be a nightmare coming back from the World Police Fire Games, was actually easier than coming into New York. and you know, I have an ID card that says police on it, and they gave me a hard time. So it really depends on who you're dealing with, because like everything else, you know, not everybody knows all the rules. But TSA and local law enforcement are two very different perspectives.
Well, Frank, why we got you on here? I'm giggling because you know where I'm going with this.
Yeah, I do.
let's talk about what happened with the mutual friend of ours, and John knows who we're talking about and what we're talking about.
Okay.
Leaving the Northeast Regional last year at M&M. Now, this is important because we have the World Championship coming up at M&M in May. So this is important that everybody understands this story, what happened, and what you can learn from this and not to do here, right? So let's talk about what happened and what should have happened.
Our mutual friend actually reached out to me weeks prior and said he was coming into Kennedy and he was flying into New York and he was going to M&M, renting a car, going down for the shoot, and wanted to know, is there anything in particular that he needs to be leery or be cautious of? And I said, nope. Put the firearm in the car, separate case, no ammo. You should be good. Transport it, leave it in the trunk, transport to M&M. You should be good, and vice versa. If you have problems, call me. Well, the individual traveled and brought his wife with him and decided to stop in New York City on the way to Kennedy for a night of, let's stay in a hotel and we'll do a little sightseeing and then we'll get on a flight tomorrow or the day after. Either way, this is what happened. And he couldn't check into his room and bring his luggage, gun case, and bags up to his room right away. So he left it with the concierge at the front desk. And
he had gotten to the hotel early.
Yes. What it was. So they went out and they did a little sightseeing for a number of hours, whatever. Went and had something to eat, came back, and got there, I think, about 8 o'clock at night. Checked in. After they got to their room, you know, the local Midtown North Precinct guys show up and start asking questions about a certain container that may have a firearm. Does that container have a firearm? And he's going, hello, I got the phone call. As the story continues, the cops were like, listen, we're going to leave it up to the boss. Well, sergeant's going to figure it out and we'll go from there. And I thought everything was okay. Apparently it wasn't, because a few hours later, I get the phone call from somebody that he was arrested for possession of a firearm or for a shotgun and not having a permit. Now, in New York City, in the five boroughs itself, it's a completely different rule. My research has shown that the administrative code and the New York State penal code overlap in some ways, and in some ways they don't. So the administrative code doesn't see any overlap other than the city of New York. It does not look at the statute for New York State. So he can travel through New York State, not a problem, with a long gun. Handgun is a different story in itself. But New York City has different rules. Because you have to have a permit for a rifle or a shotgun, he now is in possession of a firearm without a permit, even though he's out of state.
Let me back up and break this down and simplify it for everybody so they understand the mistakes that were made. So,
yeah.
Number one, he got to the hotel early, couldn't check in. Okay, no big deal. But he left the firearm with the bellhop.
Yes.
Okay. That's mistake number one, right?
That was mistake number one. But and I have to, you know, just step back and say, you know, as your average American, I can't see that to be a problem in itself. The problem stems with the rules of New York City. Okay. And there's a gray area, and it's a very vague gray area, because in the administrative code, an out-of-state resident is permitted to travel through the five boroughs with possession of those long guns for 24 hours without a problem. As soon as he deviated from transport from the airport or from his, you know, out-of-state location to travel back through the five boroughs to go to the airport, as soon as he deviated from that, that's when the administrative code applies now, because now you're not in transit. It's not in a locked trunk. It's not separated. Now you're actually back into a possession formality in the general public.
So let's go back to, let's say this happens to someone. They're traveling to the World Championship. They're staying in New York City. They get to their hotel early, the same thing. So what should that person have done? If it's legal to transport through the city, is it get back in the rental car, go drive around? I mean,
and to be honest with you, as the administrative code is written, it says that you have to get permission from the police commissioner or an advisory person in the same capacity. In other words, you need the mayor or the police commissioner to give you permission to do this.
Okay.
Anything other than 24 hours transporting it through the boroughs. And it should be locked in a case in the back of a trunk of a car for transport.
Right. And now let's fast forward. It took how many months to get his firearm back?
6 or 7. It was ridiculous. Wow.
Yeah. And this is a not a cheap firearm. We're talking custom stock.
Yeah.
Whole nine yards. This is not an inexpensive firearm. Yeah. And it cost legal fees. And he had a fine he had to pay, right?
Oh, it was a $100 fine. So it wasn't the fine. It was the
legal fees.
The legal fees hit him over the head. I think he was upwards of 6,000 plus. The bottom line was it was supposed to go to Midtown Court, and then his attorney made it more messy than anything else, and they had to bring it downtown to an administrative judge that's not even a real judge. I don't even know what that was, but it was all about just going there, and he had to go there in person and plead guilty. He had to fly back from California or wherever out west he was. He had to fly back here just to say, yes, I'll plead guilty to it and pay the $100 fine for an administrative code, not even a criminal offense. That was the best part.
Right.
And then he wasn't able to take his firearm with him. He actually had to go back downtown to One Police Plaza and actually sign off on the paperwork and try to actually get it with his a notarized letter and everything. And then the department didn't want to give it to me, of all things, because they didn't want me walking out of the One Police Plaza with a firearm. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'm a retired detective. Where is the problem here? And they gave me such a hard time. They wanted to ship it directly out to him, to another FFL.
Okay. So speaking of that, speaking of shipping,
yes,
John, this is where I'm going to bring you into this, 'cause I think you know a little bit of the situation. So, this individual had a Pelican case, a big Pelican case, and he also had his named case. What I mean by named case is it was a Negrini soft case, but it had the gun name on the outside of the case. This is where all the problems started. But anyway,
yeah.
So he transferred his gun into that named case. He gave me the big Pelican case full of clothes, put locks on it, and asked me to ship it back to his house. So I stopped at UPS. It was like 40, $43 or something to ship this thing. Mm-hmm. And they said, does that have a firearm in it? I said, no, it does not. And they said, okay. And I said, let me ask you something, Mr. UPS man. What would this have cost if it did have a firearm in it? He said, an extra $20. I said, what about, and this is where, John, this is where I have a question for you. Would it have to have gone to an FFL dealer, or could I have just shipped it to his address?
So obviously you need to follow state and local law, and I'll swing back to some of the New York issues, but look, there's state laws, there's federal laws, and there may be local ordinances like in New York City. ATF rules allow you to ship a firearm to yourself. So that's a common option for some folks that do not want to fly with a firearm. You could ship it from, it's from you to you, in the care of someone else, as long as they don't have access to it. The person who gets the firearm can't open it or take possession of the firearm or have access to the locks. However, you could ship it to, you know, hotel guest John Comerford at the Marriott in San Antonio. That's not a problem at all. I would need to check on California law on how that works. California is an anomaly, just like New York City. It's a petri dish for bad ideas. So I would need to check if that's a state. Like, for instance, I'm just picking California as an example. But depending on what state it goes to, you would need to check the rules there. But it is very common to be able to ship a firearm to yourself.
So he could have left M&M, went to a local UPS store, and shipped it to himself, possibly. I mean, obviously California state, may have a different.
Yeah, if the state allowed for it, yes.
Yeah. So that would have been a safer option than a cheaper option. Than
a lot of ranges are used to dealing with that. It's not the best because you are just like it's not the best to ship your ammo to a range, because not only are you not buying your ammo at the range, you're making their employees handle your ammo for free when you can just ship it to your hotel. But a lot of folks will leave their guns at a range or expect that the range can ship it for you. The better option is to ship it from your hotel. But you can always check with the range to see if they have a UPS or a FedEx pickup. The policies on actually shipping the firearm, like for instance, handguns have to be sent no slower than second day air. That's a federal requirement. Long guns can be shipped ground. However, you need to check with your common carrier whether or not they'll handle it and what their policies are. They're private companies. They can handle it. USPS does handle this, but you just need to do your due diligence on what the company will allow, whether it's UPS, FedEx, DHL, right, whatever your service is.
Yeah, John, from my experience, when it comes to New York, I believe all firearms should be transported through FFLs, period.
So you can ship it to yourself.
Yes, but I'm going to tell you this. New York State Police has issues with firearms being transported without an FFL on it. So the issue is that, you know, when UPS drops off a package at my house and I'm not home, that package could be left. I know it's not supposed to do that, but they do it all the time. Now you've got a firearm that's accessible to the public. Anybody that pulls in my driveway can just, you know, and it happens a lot. So that's why New York State, and I believe California is the same. I've sent some guns to California and they're very strict on FFL to FFL. And to be honest with you, so the public knows this, it really doesn't cost that much more. I think the most I've ever paid for an FFL to FFL transfer, I think, was like $85.
So one thing you need to keep in mind is, depending on the jurisdiction or the state, if they have a waiting period. So some states have waiting periods. So if you ship it to yourself and you're flying right there, and let's say they have a 7-day waiting period. New Mexico just did this. And you ship it there, you can't pick up your own firearm for 7 days. So again, it's very important to take a look at how what the jurisdiction you're going to's laws are. And like, for instance, in New York, with picking up that firearm, they wouldn't give you the firearm because they would be giving you possession of the firearm. And that's without a transfer. That's probably why they don't allow for a temporary transfer. So that's probably the issue there. But for instance, New York is red flag number one. Traveling with a firearm. Countless people are arrested on a regular basis at a Port Authority controlled airport. Most of the time it involves a handgun. And a lot of times it's because your flight was canceled, your flight was delayed, you picked up your baggage and then you went to your hotel, and they whack you when you pick up your bag. So you're safe. It's, or excuse me, they get you when you go to check back in with the bag. So we always recommend, if you are stranded in New York because of a delay, or you are connecting in New York, that's not even your end destination. You're going to Maine and your flight connected at JFK and it got canceled, and you have to go to a hotel and you have a handgun, we recommend getting your baggage, getting a rental car, and driving to an airport in a safe state like Pennsylvania to fly out, for it to be the safest. Because we get countless calls for legal support on a regular basis from our members and from gun owners who have been pinched at a Port Authority controlled airport because of this issue. And I think it's important to look at, if you do get caught in a state like that, feel free, you can call NRA. We do legal referrals. If you get caught in New York, there's one attorney who really specializes in this. His name's Evan Knappen. He does New Jersey and New York. That's essentially a big chunk of his business is firearms related defense. And there's no one else I would call in that situation. But traveling, we talked about deviation and some different things. It's important to know, and this applies, you know, nationwide. There's something called the Firearms Owners Protection Act, which was enacted in 1986. This is essentially what provides the standard on the federal side for transporting a firearm through interstate commerce. So that's driving in your car. That is, Frank mentioned, you want to have your firearm in a locked container, or it can be separate from the passenger compartment. But you have to keep in mind, a lot of cars nowadays, even sedans, are easily, trunks are easily accessible through back seats to drop down. If you have a pickup truck with a hard lockable tonneau cover, that's considered a separate passenger compartment. But let's say it's in the cab of your truck. You want to have your Pelican case or some sort of locked case with an unloaded firearm in your vehicle. And you cannot have unnecessary deviation. So staying in that prohibited state, if you had, let's say, an AR-15 and you were transiting from Pennsylvania to Maine, where it's legal in both states, you can't have unnecessary deviation in the states where it's banned. But essentially, if it's where you start your trip and where you end your trip, if that firearm's legal, you're protected under FOFA if you follow those rules. However, in the Second and Third Circuits, which is Connecticut, New York, Vermont, Delaware, New Jersey, and Pennsylvania, they treat mm-hmm. that as an affirmative defense. So you may be even arrested by a New Jersey state trooper, let's say, and then you have to affirm your defense by citing FOPA. So it's sort of guilty till proven innocent in those regards. So it's important to protect yourself. Go into the world of English. I heard you mention that. Look, I grew up in New Jersey, Salem County in Pennsylvania, New Jersey, where M&M is a heck of a lot different than North Jersey, New York State. The town and the locality is very happy to have a destination like M&M there. However, you still need to follow the law. And whenever possible, I would suggest flying into Philadelphia Airport, flying Absolutely. Into Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C., which is about the same distance as JFK to Pennsylvania.
Baltimore.
Time-wise. Yep, BWI in Baltimore, Reagan Airport in D.C. These are all good options to fly into, where you're in a safe place to fly with your firearm.
Well, that's why I was, you know, that's one of the reasons why I wanted to bring all this up, because I'm sure somebody coming from somewhere, I mean, this is the world championship. People are coming from all over the world to shoot this. So somebody might have a connector, or they might have to drive through one of these towns. So it's important to have this information. So Sean, you had something.
Yeah. Well, I kind of wanted to, is there a way, guys, that we can kind of, just so our listeners can understand without being so overwhelmed, I realize that there's places that have different rules and so on and so forth, but what are some of the basic steps that our listeners can take to better prepare themselves when they are traveling with a firearm? And I don't care, you know, John, Frank, whichever you want to answer that.
John, one point, a valuable point about your case, you know, TSA rules are one thing, but the case themselves, the Negrini cases, I find to be extremely well built and handle very well, because these cases are thrown and tossed through TSA like literally, I think they put them to the test for a purpose.
Right.
To see if the gun is going to come out, you know.
And I've gotten my brand new Negrini case back, and it looked like it literally got thrown down the runway a couple of times. You know, and they put it to the test. Trust me, there is no joke that they really put these cases to the test. And if your case doesn't hold up or will not hold up, your gun's getting damaged. Now, I don't know about you guys, but I have a Kohler. That's not a cheap gun. And I'm looking forward to getting to where I want to go and shoot well. And if my gun is damaged, I've just defeated the whole purpose of this travel, you know, because of equipment failure. So getting your equipment is the other thing, too. At the end of your trip, when you get there, you know, firearms are supposed to go to a luggage area that's protected and actually screened. Okay. Not all the time. Airlines will just throw them on the conveyor and come out with all the other luggage.
Yep. I've had that happen multiple times.
Yeah, you've got to be very careful on making sure you're at the conveyor for the first bag to come out, because if it's your gun and somebody grabs it and walks out the door with it, you know, you've just lost a very big ticket item. And
yes,
you're going to make a police report out and they're going to go, what a firearm? What do you mean you have a firearm? Because now you're dealing with local. You're not dealing with TSA. So the jurisdictions overlap.
When I use my Negrini case, just the case, it always goes to, you know, I fly Southwest. It always goes to the Southwest office like it's supposed to. You show your ID and you can get your gun.
Yes.
If I put the protective soft cover over top of it with the shoulder strap,
yep,
every single time it'll come out in the carousel. Every single time. And they say, well, that doesn't look like a firearm. And I'm like, I mean, I've raised hell because, like you said, Frank, it's an expensive gun. I want it to go to the office. I don't want it to come out on the carousel. And absolutely, they said, well, that doesn't look like a gun, so they just throw it on the... I'm like, you know, that's another thing, too. Why don't they tag it? Why don't they put a bright red tag on it that says firearm, you know?
American Airlines tags... Yes. Well, you don't want to ever tag it as a firearm because it's going to get stolen.
Exactly.
There's many instances of airport personnel stealing firearms. There's a big issue on this recently, and I don't know who sponsors this show, but I travel with... There's nothing wrong with the Negrini cases. They make a great case. I worked at Krieghoff. They provided the cases, and they're excellent. I prefer to travel with a puff pack because it doesn't look like a firearm case. It looks like camera equipment. I see many people, whether it's a Negrini or a Beretta case or Pelican or whatever, they decorate their firearm case like it's the back of a Subaru in Boulder, Colorado. And I just don't – it perplexes me why you want to advertise to the world what you have in that case.
John, you have me at Subaru.
So, and you all know what I'm talking about. You see the cases walking by, and it's, I walk out, no one has any idea what's in my case. Plus, I can put, you know, rain gear and boots and everything else in there. But it is, I have found American, there was an incident a few years ago at an airport, which led to different reasons for airlines treating firearms differently. Delta, for instance, was zip tying your case together when you picked it up. American put tags on return to baggage service office. It would just say BSO. And that was fine. I've seen American doing that less recently. My bag has been coming out with the oversized baggage typically, or on the carousel itself. However, it's important to know that you can wait with the carousel first to see if your bag comes out, because if it is going to the baggage service office or if it is oversized, it is always going to come out last. So go check the carousel first. When that stops, that's when you know you can go look at the other location, in my experience.
Well, as far as the case goes, I think it's up to the individual to do their homework. I mean, you know, Negrini was a longtime supporter of this program. Sean and I use Negrini cases. We love them. Pelican, I know, makes a great case. But I would say, unless you guys are going to say something different, if you can't throw it off the top of a 10-story building without damaging your firearm, it's not good enough to put on an airplane. And it's not because of it riding in the airplane. It's because from the time it leaves your hands to the time it gets in that airplane, those people do not make enough money to care. And they will throw it every way they can. So, I mean, John, Frank, if you guys got something different to add to that, I think we'll move on from the case. But
one other quick thing is make sure you have insurance. You know, if you have a valuable firearm, you should have insurance, whether it's through NRA, whether it's through the NSCA's affiliated programs, or there's Eastern Insurance. There's quite a few folks out there you know, make sure you protect yourself if you have a valuable asset. It is an asset. It's not just a tool.
Well, you're stealing our future questions here, but that was something we were going to bring up.
I was going to say the same thing.
Sean and I both use SIAI, which is the Sportsman's Insurance Agency incorporated through the NSCA. We haven't had to use them, but they've been very good to work with. You call them if you have a problem filling out the form or whatever, but is there any advice either one of you can give? John, we'll start with you, as far as what to look for in the policy, making sure you have enough coverage. You know, if they're not going to use SIAI, which specializes in this, they're going to use another insurance agency. What do they need to look for in insurance?
So I think one thing that turns gun owners off is you'll see some insurances, if your firearm is over, let's say, $10,000 in value, they'll ask you to itemize that. I know with NRA's insurance partner, it's a voluntary thing. You don't have to do it to get the coverage. But look at what your maximum coverage is. I think something important to look for is, does the coverage just damage to the firearm? If your grade 5 piece of wood takes a bat 2 into the stock, you know, is it going to cover refinishing? If, God forbid, your firearm fell out of the gun rack or the golf cart, you know, will they cover that? I know the Sportsman's Insurance you just mentioned does cover that. At least they did. I've noticed that when I was at Krieghoff, we'd have customers do that. I personally have insurance through both NRA, and then I use a company called Eastern's Insurance, who actually covers ammunition in the policy as well. So if you have your ammo in your basement, let's say it floods, or there's a fire, things like that, you can get up to $50,000 of coverage for that. So I think there's a lot of products out there, but I would definitely pick one that specializes in that, in the firearms world, instead of, I see many people trying to cover these things through their homeowner's insurance. And I would strongly suggest getting an outside insurance company who specializes in firearms versus doing that.
It also depends on your homeowners, because there are some homeowners that do an additional $1 million policy for just those particular types of things. So
that's good.
It's a customer's personal preference. You should know your insurance company and do the due diligence about asking the right questions to your agents.
Yeah. And I was going to say, I mean, for those of us for our listeners out there that are hearing this, you know, we did an episode a while back. We had SIAI on, and they explained their coverage, not saying that they're the only game in town. But I would definitely make sure that you guys do your homework and definitely have some kind of coverage on there and know what's excluded. Because obviously, I know that on my policy, and Jason, yours is probably similar, not only is my gun covered, but my choke tubes are covered. Any accessories that are in the gun case are also covered, and you can actually have that coverage on your SIA policy.
Yeah, the case itself is covered.
Yeah, the Greeny case itself is covered. So
if you have any custom work, if you got a custom stock, if you've got, you know, like you brought it up, Frank, a detachable trigger, if you got an extra trigger or something, Sean and I have sub-gauge tubes. Those are covered. I mean,
yep.
But, you know, you got to list them on the policy. But, yeah, they cover all of it.
Yeah, this is all, you know, very expensive items. I don't know, you know, a lot of our listeners are top-end shooters are buying Krieghoffs and Colters and Berettas, the DT-11s. They're in the thousands of dollars. They're spending a lot of money on this equipment. It's important to have the right coverage, because if you're not covered, you're just throwing money away.
Yeah, absolutely.
Insurance is cheap.
Well, John, I also want to circle back. Now, I know that, I think you said it earlier, as far as the cases go, I mean, Negrini has their own, like, roll lock system, but you're saying no to the TSA locks, correct?
Absolute no. Never use a TSA lock. You're giving people access to your firearm that shouldn't have access to it. You can buy TSA locks right on Amazon for $7. It will access it. ATF specifically requires you to not use a TSA lock when traveling. We actually just asked TSA to update their terminology on their own guidance that said TSA recognized locks. They're going to be taking that off. To say you should be the only one who has access to your firearm, whether that's through, I'm a big fan of combination locks, because you can't forget the key.
Yeah.
There's nothing worse than, you know, you fly to Nationals and you don't have the key. You know, then you got to go buy another lock and a set of bolt cutters.
Yep.
Yeah.
Let me ask one more quick question here. So two hypothetical scenarios. So number one, What if a person's traveling through the airport and they've mistakenly left a few shotgun shells in their shooting vest pocket? What's going to happen to them at that point?
So if you go through the checkpoint, it's in your checked bag, mm-hmm. or your carry-on bag, excuse me, you're going to be stopped. I don't know how they're going to treat it like gun parts, but it's a prohibited item. So make that a part of your routine. You know, check your bag. If when in doubt, declare it. Or if you have a couple, you know, you throw them out. If you're at the, I do a secondary check when I get out of my rental car on my carry-on bag, but make it a part of your routine. If you're packing, you have to pack your firearm, right? You're putting your chokes away. You're putting your shooting glasses away. You're putting your firearm away. Check all your pockets, check what's in your carry-on, and just make sure you're compliant. It'll make your travel day a lot smoother.
Okay.
That happened to me, Sean.
What's that?
I said that happened to me, Sean.
Did it?
The first time I went to Nationals, remember I had my little NSCA gear bag that I got?
Yep.
And I had emptied everything out, and I folded that thing up. It had my vest in it, folded it all up, and put it in my carry-on, and I missed a shell. And I went through the I went through security, and they're like, "Is this your bag?" I'm like, "Yeah." Come here for a minute. pulled out a 12 gauge 1 ounce. I'm like, oh God. He goes, he looked at me and he just sitting there holding it. And I'm like, can you just throw that away? I'm really sorry. I missed it somehow. And he looked at me, never took his eyes off of me and threw it in the trash can. He goes, get out of here.
So, was like, probably wasn't worth the trouble. I'm honestly.
No.
I think they should have bought a,
you should have bought a scratch off ticket that night. Cause you got lucky.
Yeah, no kidding. I got lucky. But yeah, hey, Frank is right. Pocket knives are something I see. It's constantly I see people get pulled aside for pocket knives.
Yes. People forget they have them. They carry them every day.
Yep. Hey, one more thing, guys. All right. So with all the screening equipment that different airports have, what about issues with people? Like, let's say you didn't get a chance to wash your hands real good. Any concerns about powder residue, gun oils, gun cleaners, things like that that would trigger a screening device?
They're swabbing your hands for explosives if you do get selected for extra screening. I've actually went to an airport and been screened right after leaving a shoot, for instance, like a Jack Lynx, a drive right to the airport, and I've never had an issue with that. But they'll swab if they do an extra check on your gun case, they may swab it for explosives. But I don't know if you've had any different experience, Frank.
Yeah, gunpowder residue will never come up on those swabs. Even though it's powder residue. In other words, it's already been ignited. So there's no live potential for that to come up positive on their swipes. Okay. They're not looking for that type of materials. Okay. All right. So that's never been an issue. I mean, I've been through, I can't tell you how many times right after 9/11, in 2002, I was traveling, doing some stuff for work. And, you know, I'm traveling with a firearm, and literally I'd leave the range out in California, shoot, and I'm shooting handguns, pistols, and shotguns, get on a flight and come back. And they're like, oh, well, you know, okay, they're going to swap you. They literally were swapping down my gun cases for explosives. So you're handling all kinds of firearms and residue all over the place. It doesn't come up anywhere on anything. So that's not really a worry. You know, they're looking for a C4. They're looking for certain types of dynamite, any kind of offset explosive, just like gotcha. A dog would hit on certain explosives, not gunpowder residue.
Okay. All right. Just want to make sure.
No, absolutely.
Well, listen, guys, I hope anybody that's listening to this, we're not scaring anybody. That's not the intent of this. Is, you know, we have a lot of new shooters that listen to this program, as well as seasoned veteran competitors and travelers. And I think it's important that everybody knows what can happen, what they need to look for. Obviously, it's every individual's responsibility to check the laws, where they're going, the airports they're going to. John, we'll start with you. I'm sorry, Frank.
I'm sorry, Jason. It's more important for everybody to understand safety first, just like at the range. You know, ask the right questions, get the right answers so you know what you're walking into. This is a really simple process. You know, airports are very, very good at doing it. I've never had any negative or derogatory attitudes from employees from airlines or from TSA. Most of the times, they never even ask me for my ID, and I'm carrying a handgun. As relatively, you know, you would think that, oh, you know, why are you carrying a handgun? You know, well, here's my detective shield, my ID card, which you never asked. And it's funny how they just say, okay, yeah, no, you're good. It's all locked up. It's unloaded. Okay, send it through. You know, and it's kind of nice that we are actually in America and they recognize these rights and they don't really push the envelope. It's kind of nice the way you get treated most of the time. John, have you had any different experience?
No, I always, even folks that just are ignorant to you traveling with a firearm, you generally can find a supervisor who knows the situation. Again, we're trying to really work with the airlines and TSA to educate their employees. Look, I always think about it as the person I'm talking to may have had a really crappy day too.
Yeah.
So I try to be as patient as possible. Sometimes that patience runs thin, but you're going to have good experiences for the vast majority of your travel time. And I think that's, you know, even if something's not going great, it's remember what experience you just had while you're at the shoot or what experience you're going to have when you get there. And I think the most important thing traveling is it's not a terrible process. Once you know what you're doing, you'll get done your first trip with your gun flying and you'll say, oh, that wasn't bad at all. I always just remind people, look, your firearm's your responsibility. Yeah, make sure it's in the lock case when you travel. If you have to deviate, make sure it's out of sight in a locked vehicle. Always use the gun club storage options if possible, especially like in San Antonio. I recommend that. I personally recommend that you never give possession of your firearm in the case to a hotel. For instance, in Las Vegas, hotels may scan your luggage and then you'll have issues. They may not let you stay at the hotel. It's not against the law in Nevada to stay at a hotel with a firearm, but some hotels have policies on that. So, you know, try to maintain possession of your case, even though it's locked, and, you know, just enjoy the trip and the experience.
Yeah. Never leave your firearm in your hotel room.
Yeah.
If you're not there.
Good point.
Yeah. That's a really good point.
You know, it's a lot of times it's employees that are actually, it's always in-house that creates the problem and lets somebody an open door policy, so to speak, you know. Now, what happens when you come back and your firearms are missing?
Yeah.
You know, hotel key cards have a recorded code. Every time that door is opened, you know who opened it. Specifically, if it's a maid, you know which maid it was. So there's no question we can actually backtrack as far as a criminal process. But do we really want to leave it up to the general possibility?
Yeah.
You know? I treat my firearm like it's a personal child almost, you know what I mean? So, and I know most people do that way with their guns.
And guys, I'll just look, we beat up on New York a lot, rightfully so. We beat up on California a lot, rightfully so. But look, NRA is working every day to try to fix that. In states like New York, California, we could spend $1 billion and not make a dent on the legislative side. We're putting our money into legal cases, as most folks listening saw in 2022 with the Bruin case, which was NRA's solely funded case, which has allowed me to get a Maryland carry permit and a Jersey carry permit, things I never thought I'd see in my lifetime. And we're challenging these permits to possess firearms, permits to acquire firearms, ammo background checks in California, things like that. So NRA is very active, trying to make your life a lot easier as a firearm owner and respecting your rights, even in these states that want to treat you like a second-class citizen.
Yeah, New York actually has been doing that. Go to clubs, I go to buy ammo, and they're like, we need your ID. Are you on file? And I go, I want a flat of 12-gauge. And, well, we need your ID. We need to do a NICS check on you. Excuse me, for ammo, you need to do a NICS check? And absolutely, that's what we're doing now. That's what, you know, Governor Hochul wants us to. Are you kidding me? This is what it's come to.
We have a case that's fairly far along. Kim Rohde, an Olympian, great Olympian, is one of the lead plaintiffs on the NRA case in the Ninth Circuit. And the goal there is to take that to the U.S. Supreme Court so it would affect states like New York. I know I talk with Rad Chad all the time about this with California's ammo rules and youth advertising. We're very close to getting rid of that ridiculous age question that every gun company has had to put on their website. We're very close with an NRA legal case on fixing that. So I hope everybody stays patient with us, and that's what we're here to do.
Yeah, John, it's funny because I'm a varsity you know, high school coach, and, you know, I travel and I actually promote more law enforcement and first responders to be involved with every local club. And I can't advertise that on my trailer or my RV or even my smart car or my, you know, golf cart, because it can't say youth anywhere, because as soon as I come into New York, now I've broken the law.
Wow.
Yeah.
Yep. Crazy stuff.
And it's a shame. It hurts the kids, because more first responders involved with youth, the better our future is in this country.
Absolutely.
Agreed.
Well, hey, one last quick question for John. Is there anything on the NRA site, people that are traveling, they want to go check? I mean, does NRA have anything about traveling as far as different states and stuff go, what to look for, what not to look for, like a cheat card almost?
We have a lot of information on our website on NRAILA.org. There's information on traveling. We're going to be having some very new information coming out in working with TSA to try to educate firearm owners on how to travel. But we have everything there under Get the Facts and then gun laws. We have state gun laws. We have LEOSA information for folks like Frank. They're retired law enforcement officers with dealing with states like New Jersey who sometimes have a hard time recognizing them. So check out NRAILA.org. It's a good resource.
Excellent.
I got one more thing, Jason.
Yes, sir.
All the listeners, I think it's extremely important that they actually get an NRA membership. And if they're not, if they're just a member, or like I'm a life member, it's so important to actually back the people that are backing us.
Yeah, for sure.
Very true.
I know myself, I'm a lifetime NRA member. You know, I don't want anybody to take this as like some kind of political avenue. These people are fighting for your Second Amendment rights and your ability to go and compete and shoot sporting clays and trap and skeet like we like to do. So they fight for you. So fight for them. You know, it's kind of the way
exactly.
I see it.
It's the American way.
So
absolutely.
Well, Frank,
absolutely.
Frank, it's been a huge honor having you on. We thank you very much for your long, dedicated service. We appreciate you immensely. John, always an honor, always a fun time talking to you. Thank you for all the great information. Thank you for what you're doing with the NRA. And guys, I think this has been good. I hope this puts some people's minds at ease as far as traveling. It can be done. It can be done safely and conveniently and easily if they just follow the rules. So hopefully we got some good information out to everybody.
Thank you very much, guys.
Happy to do it, guys. Have a good day.
Thanks. Y'all too.
See you guys.
Thank you, John.
You know, Sean, like I was saying there when we had Frank and John on the phone, I hope this doesn't deter or scare anybody. We're not trying to do that. We're just trying to tell you what can happen, what you need to be aware of, what you need to be prepared for. You know, if you do just a little bit of homework, it's not hard to do. You can figure out, hey, look, I'm flying to Minnesota next week to shoot a tournament or I'm to be there with family and I'm going to go shoot while I'm there. I'm taking my firearm with me. Well, then you need to check the Minnesota airports. You need to check the Minnesota state laws on traveling with a firearm. It's not hard. And like John said, they've got, you know, something up on the NRA site now where you can go there. It's kind of like a little cheat sheet or cheat page or however you want to refer to it.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, I think we've talked quite a bit about traveling. We've talked about, you know, how to protect your gun, how to do insurance. And we also touched on that in this episode as well. But obviously, you know, if you're not aware of certain things, and again, these are more exceptions, not the rule. I mean, New York, California, there's some different weird stuff there that you have to navigate and kind of paint it with a very broad stroke. Most of the other states aren't nearly as difficult to deal with. But because it happened to somebody we knew last year, we thought it was a very important topic to at least discuss, especially with the worlds, like you said, Jason, coming in this year, and people are going to be traveling to those areas again this year. So,
but my and before you get off of that, Sean, I don't mean to interrupt you, but my point with all this is, yeah, there might be somebody living and say, well, I just won't go through New York. Well, I already told you how Florida, that's a very red state, if you go to the Tampa Bay airport, it's not easy. So right. Even the states that are gun friendly, you know, that TSA or that airline or that municipality may have restrictions that make it a little tougher. You just got to know the rules.
Yeah. And that's the thing. The responsibility lies with you, the shooter, to be able to research and do a quick, you know, quick study on what you may or may not run into, and at least be aware of it. And also just the common sense factor of, right, hey, not going to have any live ammo in my carry-on bag, not going to do this, not going to do that. I mean, the simple things. I mean, mistakes can happen, but just realize, depending on how understanding the person is that you're dealing with, you know, like you, Jason, you might get away with just a chuckle and a slap on the wrist, where somebody else, again, having a bad day, or feeling like they got to, you know, throw their power around, may cost you time, money, frustration, or all of the above.
Right, exactly. Well, hey, look, moving on from that, there's something I wanted to bring up real quick. There's something we don't talk enough about, is when you go to visit a club for a tournament, you know, we've talked a little bit about it in different episodes here and there, how hard these clubs work. You know, you've got an owner or maybe a couple of owners of the club that have put their heart and soul into it. The staff, Sean, you know how hard it is to put on a tournament. You and I experienced that firsthand.
Absolutely.
These people do a lot of work. And if you go there and you don't like the targets, or maybe something happened, something backed up, and then the worst thing, the biggest nightmare for any of these club managers or owners is to hear, wow, this sucks, or, oh, this, the food was terrible, or whatever. They've worked so hard to put on an event for you. You look, be understanding, okay? You're dealing with mechanical devices. You're dealing with human beings. There's going to be error. If people didn't make mistakes, pencils wouldn't have erasers. But what I am saying is, give your clubs and the people that work there, especially the trappers, some credit. I mean, it really, they're there for you to have a good time. If something doesn't go your way, you can't take it out on them. Just be a little understanding. I just want to make sure these clubs are getting the credit they deserve.
Yep. And, you know, just a general thank you to any of the staff or the club manager would go a long way, too. Those people work very hard. And oftentimes, like you said, Jason, it's thankless, or people walk away from a tough tournament grumbling. So, hey, you know what? It takes you 3 seconds to say thank you to the trapper that just pulled your targets when you're walking out of the box. So why not?
Yeah. And if you see the guys out setting traps or filling traps or emptying trash cans or anybody that works there, man, hey, thank you for being here. Hey, thank you for what you're doing. Goes a really long way.
Absolutely. So, absolutely.
Sean Elliott, we tell everybody every week, take someone who's shooting, take them to a tournament. Yes, I stole your line because I knew you were going to throw it back. I knew you were going to throw it back at me again. So, listen, this episode was important to us because we know the World Championship's coming up at M&M. We've seen what can happen leaving M&M. No fault to M&M. But it was important to us that you got some good information in front of you for all your traveling, not just to the World Shoot, but all your traveling throughout the year. And we hope when you're taking that new person to a tournament, if you guys are flying somewhere, we hope you take some of this advice you heard today to heart.
Absolutely. And also want to be remiss. We want to send a big thank you out to all of our sponsors that help us present this show every week to you guys. Fiocchi USA, Elite Shotguns, Vero Beach, Rhino Chokes, RE Ranger, Odo Pro Technologies, Atlas Traps, the lovely Don Grant, and Casey and all the gals at Score Chaser. Those people support us. We ask you to please consider to support them.
And don't forget our newly joined sponsor, Distilleries.
That's right. I almost forgot that one. And you know what? I've got a bottle of bourbon sitting right here.
Are you enjoying tonight, Sean?
I have got let me pull it up here. This is their double barrel maple bourbon. And they've actually won some awards on this one, Jason.
Yes.
It's quite tasty.
That's my favorite one. I haven't tried all of them yet. I'm working my way through it. I'm trying to pace myself and be responsible about this. So
that's right. That's right.
That maple is absolutely my favorite. But I've got my eyeballs on some of the new ones that I've seen on the site there. So you guys get over and check that out. So that's some very good stuff. Let's put it that way.
Absolutely.
Another thing, too, one last thing before we go, the clubs and the coaches page on our website. Get over and check that out. If you are looking for a club or looking for a coach, I know the list is building slowly, but it is coming. Understand, we've kind of like overloaded our web guy here in the last month and a half. So But he's going to get all that updated. You're going to be able to find a club or a coach no matter where you're going in the country. If you are a club or a coach, don't hesitate. Get signed up. Get your butt in line so we can get you up on the site.
Right on, right on. Definitely worth your while. Definitely going to reach a lot of new shooters and hopefully potentially drive some of those new shooters to you.
Absolutely. Well, Sean Alley, until next week, my friend.
We can't wait to see y'all back here on the Dead Pair Podcast.
We'll see you next time on the Dead Pair Podcast.
The Dead Pair. The Dead Pair Podcast is brought to you by Elite Shotguns and Vero Beach Clay Shooting and is fueled by Fiocchi USA. The Dead Pair theme song was written, arranged, and produced by Toby Tomplay. Special thanks to the following sponsors: Rhino, Otto Pro, Don Grant, Atlas Trap Company, and RE Ranger.